Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Whatever happens today, plan to conquer it with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. True North Convenience Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. Our brew is truly perfect for any time of the day. During October and November, enter for a chance to win free coffee for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or find the mobile app in your favorite app store. Offer valid 10/7 through 12/1. True Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
6:13 on this Thursday morning, October 9th. The government has been shut down now for 8 days, 6 hours, 12 minutes, 29 seconds, and counting. And I would ask you at 504-260-1870, has it affected or impacted your life at all? 504-260-1870, the Oakland Art Jeweler Talk and Text Line. As always, no texting and driving. Justin Buechler joins us to talk about it, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm okay, sir. Compare and contrast this shutdown with others, if you will, please, to get us started.
Sure. Well, most ways, it's relatively similar, but there are a few minor differences. So we're about a week into the shutdown, which means we've got a bunch of workers who are furloughed. We've got negotiations that are kind of stalled. So everything is relatively close to where it has been in similar shutdowns. There are a few differences. Usually what has happened in past shutdowns is that it has been the Republicans who have pushed for some extra demand on top of a clean continuing resolution. So the first major difference is this time it's been the Democrats who have asked for something on top of a clean continuing resolution, and that's the extension of some health care subsidies from Obamacare. So that's the first big difference. The second big difference, and this is where I think things are really interesting, is that historically what has happened is that whichever party has made the demand on top of just clean funding for the government, that party has had to cave. But what I think is really interesting this year is that the Republicans, and specifically President Trump, has almost pre-caved and said that he was willing to negotiate just at the beginning of the shutdown on these healthcare subsidies. And that has really hurt the Republicans' bargaining position. So I think that's the primary difference, is that's kind of given the Democrats more of an edge than I expected this time around.
There are a lot of Republicans that benefit from these subsidies, right? Working Republicans?
Yeah, that's true. The subsidies that we're talking about are for workers who are making more money than eligibility for Medicaid, but don't get health insurance through their employers. And that's a significant number, and that has nothing to do with partisanship. So there are Democrats and Republicans who both qualify for the subsidies, and that cuts across party lines. Yeah, that's true.
And it goes to, I guess, why they chose this hill, because politically, the Republicans, first of all, I would ask you, who shut the government down? Because I get texts from people saying it's the Democrats. I get texts from people saying it's the Republicans. When you get right down to it, it would be the Democrats, because they didn't want to allow a vote in the Senate. Now we're getting in the weeds with cloture and so forth, but they didn't want to allow a vote or to end the filibuster, or at least to prevent a filibuster. Now I'm really getting tangled up in it. Take me through it, Professor. Explain that
sure.
for everybody.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. So my rule and the way that I describe it for every single shutdown, because I want a consistent rule, I try to be consistent and analytical in everything, is that whichever side just wants to extend funding and is willing to have a clean continuing resolution, that's not the side that shuts down the government. Whichever side wants something additional on top of that, and says, we will not fund the government unless you give us X, that's the side responsible for the shutdown. So in every past or nearly every past shutdown, I have asserted that it was the Republicans shutting down the government because they wanted something extra. So we've seen these shutdowns really since 1995 and 1996 with Newt Gingrich. And so for most of these shutdowns, it has been the Republicans because they have wanted something on top of clean continuing resolutions. For this shutdown, in my analysis, applying that same rule that I have applied every year, it's the Democrats, because they have wanted something in addition to a clean continuing resolution.
So the cuts don't happen until December 31st. This continuing resolution would go until when, that the Republicans proposed?
So there are a couple of versions, and a continuing resolution can go for however long a proposal is suggested. I've mm-hmm. seen a bunch of different variations. The most likely to pass, if they can get one, would be something like a 7-week continuing resolution. But all a continuing resolution does, just understand this, all a continuing resolution does is it extends the current funding levels in order to create more time to negotiate. So in principle, you could have a continuing resolution for a week. So what might happen is you get a continuing resolution for a week or 2 weeks just to create more time to reopen the government in order to create time for negotiations for full appropriations bills. So maybe you get one for 6 weeks, 7 weeks, and that would be the resolution which would reopen the government. But that's ultimately what's going to happen at some point, is the parties are going to agree to a continuing resolution. That continuing resolution will reopen the government, and as a result of that, there will be time to negotiate full appropriations.
So I guess what I'm wondering is, politically, why would the Democrats choose now, when the cuts don't go into effect until December 31st, unless they wanted to,
okay.
to tell you, let me take a break. You can answer when we
yeah.
come back. I just noticed the time, 6:20.
Sure.
We're talking to Justin Buechler, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University. Whenever I hear a guest say, that means I got something interesting to say. So we take a break, and then you'll hang on until we come back on WWL Traffic Now. 6:26, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Government's been shut down for 8 days, 6 hours, 24 minutes, and 45 seconds, Mark. Justin Buechler, our guest, associate professor of political science at Case Western Reserve University. So we're talking about, the Democrats chose to do this because of the upcoming cuts, subsidies to Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, but that's going to affect a lot of Republicans, too, a lot of working people who, I think, the upshot of this is that they proved that, mandate aside, they'll buy insurance if it's affordable, but it's not going to be if these cuts go away. They don't go away until December 31st, to recap for the audience, Professor. So if that's the case, why would they choose now to do this?
Yeah, so this is kind of an interesting quirk in how budgeting works. Calendar year and the fiscal year are two different things. The fiscal year for the federal government runs October 1st through October 1st. Why? That's just the timing of it, which means that annual appropriations run out on October 1st and new appropriations bills are supposed to be passed by October 1st. And that means that the Democrats' leverage, or at least so they thought, would be to hold up appropriations for October 1st at the new fiscal year. Mm-hmm. And when the subsidies expire, they don't think that they really have as much leverage. So the Democrats made a strategic choice to say, we're going to shut down the government at the point of the new fiscal year where there is maximum leverage, where shutting down the government is going to cause a lot of inconvenience to a lot of people, and that's going to increase over time, and use that as leverage based on this weird quirk of the timing of the fiscal year. And that's basically what's going on.
So how is that working out for them, and how politically much attention do they have for the people that are going to be affected by these subsidies going away?
So right now, we don't have data on how the people affected feel, because that hasn't really kicked in yet. Mm-hmm. But based on the polling, right now, the polling is favoring the Democrats. Nobody is happy about the shutdown, because nobody's ever really happy about the shutdown. But the polling tends to favor the Democrats. So I have the polling up here. And we've got three relatively recent polls. There's an Economist poll, there's a CBS poll, and there's an NPR poll. So, for example, the Economist poll says that 64% say that the Republicans are more to blame, and 53% say that the Democrats are to blame. So Republicans are taking more of the blame there. The CBS poll says that 70% are blaming the Republicans and 61% blaming the Democrats. The NPR poll says that 69% are blaming the Republicans, 58% blaming the Democrats. So basically nobody comes out looking good in a shutdown. It's just a question of who comes out looking worse. And with all of the polls that I'm seeing, Republicans look worse, which means that Democrats are doing a little bit better here. And as I think I said earlier, it looks like Republicans have sort of pre-caved and they're talking about negotiating, which tends to suggest that Democrats are going to win on this one.
Is this about paying furloughed workers? Has that taken the precedent over the health care subsidies, or do the Republicans cave on the health care subsidies in order to get the government back? How do you see this working?
That's really hard to say. The Republicans, the administration has threatened not to give back pay to the furloughed workers, but it's hard to see that playing out.
And what about the health care subsidies? Will the Republicans cave on that?
Probably, but I wouldn't give a definite answer on that.
All right. It's a mess. It always is a political mess and political theater. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. Justin Buechler, Associate Professor Political Science at Case Western Reserve University. We'll come back. Spent Thursday morning with Mike Strain, as we usually do right now. We pause for WWL First News, and for that we go to our news director, one David Cohen. 6:45, quarter till 7, Thursday morning, round these parts. At this time, we talk to Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, Dr. Mike Strain, a beloved veterinarian on the North Shore, and today is no exception. How you doing, Mike Strain? You got me muted,
yeah.
Mike Strain?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. I can hear you great, sir. You must be out in a sugarcane field on a tractor.
It won't be long. I'll be headed to Lafayette today.
Yeah.
And then, yes, believe it or not, I'm going with Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser on an alligator hunt.
Really?
Yes. Now, I asked him, said, listen, which one of us are they going to use for bait? He said, well, with both of you, you know, we ought to be able to track some real good gators. So, we're doing that today, and it's a fundraiser for the RSLC. So we're doing that. But today, this morning, I actually have a hearing at the Capitol, and it's going to be on chronic wasting disease in deer. And so there is a task force, and I'll be testifying there this morning. So it's going to be a busy day, but it's all good. It's all good. We're working on CWD, which is a very unique disease. It's a prion disease, and it's something that we're really learning a lot more. There's a whole new world out there because the infectious agent is not alive. It's not a virus. It's a subunit of protein. And believe it or not, there are human prion diseases. We're trying to understand those as well, and I think we're going to find a lot of correlations between these ancient diseases and some of the long-term diseases we've been dealing with, looking at such things as dementia, Alzheimer's, and that sort of thing, and look to see the role that prions in the human world play with that. So a lot of research going on as well.
This alligator hunt, how do you go about that? Do you use a bow and arrow? How do you do it?
Oh, no. So we're going to bait some hooks and some boats.
Oh,
right? So No. We're not going to go out there and walk around the marsh with a rifle or bow and arrow. That would not be, intelligent.
Yeah.
Because, those gators, that hunt would go both ways, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's, I knew somebody when a senior in high school, no kidding, between the time that school got out and he graduated, jumped out of a pirogue and wrestled an alligator because he thought it'd be fun to do, and he lost like 5 fingers. True story.
He's lucky to be alive.
Yeah, well, he's not anymore, but he was lucky to be alive at that point. Let's talk about Fire Prevention Week, Mike.
Yeah, we really need to gear up on that. It's very, very dry right now, and believe it or not, we've been having a number of fires. We had 43 fires last week. So far, we've had over the 507 fires to date. What's happening right now, the brush piles, it's beautiful weather. Mm-hmm. People going outside, it feels good lighting those brush piles, but you can't leave them. You need to be there with a rake and a water hose because they can get away. The conditions are such that the grass will burn, and if it continues to stay dry, we have mild degrees of drought in a number of areas in the state. Maybe we hope to get some water, but not in the next 7 to 10 days. And so we need to pay attention to what we are doing because, again, only you can prevent wildfires. Just, using common sense. And fire prevention is very, very critical, especially whether in and around the home, because a lot of times these fires, the brush piles are near the home or near a structure. And then, again, just a good little bit of caution. Also, look around your home. And, you can see, what would happen if, say, the grass caught on fire on the edge of your property? Would it be able to reach your home? Are there things, are you stacking things under your home or next to your home that you really shouldn't, that would burn easily? Another thing that we have learned when we had the massive wildfires, there are ways to help prevent your house from being susceptible to those fires. If you have areas that, say, would go under the house, and you need to clean that up, but also anything you can do to block, say, an ember. Mm-hmm. Same way with, under eaves or in any other access to the home where an ember could go in and start a fire. In your garage, think about, where you're storing gasoline for the lawnmower and other chemicals. And often, such things, as, oily rags, if you have those there. So those little things you can do as a prevention. And look at all extension cords. One thing you don't want to do is leave something hooked up to a long extension cord over time, because, as if you ever feel one, they get hot. And don't put any type of covering over an extension cord. Don't put an extension cord under a rug, because, again, that is a big source of fire as we head in to cold weather.
Mike, let's talk about crawfish. And do we know at this point what the crop might look like for next year?
We are hearing some very good news. A number of farmers are actually increasing the acreage. So far what we're hearing right now, we may have upwards over 360,000 acres of crawfish. And, and the weather has been good. The rice crop has been good. If we can get adequate rainfall, I think we are going to have a bumper crop of crawfish. So we're very excited about that. And so that is looking very good. I've seen a lot of shrimp, too, on landings, and shrimp are very, very available and affordable right now. So seafood, But again, ask before you eat, right? And make sure that you're eating Louisiana crawfish, Louisiana shrimp, U.S. Louisiana catfish, as we rebuild our, you know, our seafood industry. And don't forget about our beautiful oysters, and we've got some magnificent crabs. So I think we're going to have a very good year. We're looking at a very good year next year. And, of course, hopefully it'll start a little early. We've had really mild weather, and we haven't had, you know, any hard freezes. But I think we're going to have an exciting crawfish season next year. It's really looking good.
Mike, I saw a restaurant offering soft-shell shrimp. What's up with that?
That you'd have to hand pick those soft shell shrimp, unless they are grown. You know, they take the shrimp and by hand, I guess they would feed them and then shed them out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be, and I guess that's the delicacy, soft shell shrimp. We used to have companies that would have soft shell crawfish.
I remember those. Well,
soft shell crabs. You remember those?
Yeah, but they're very expensive, weren't they?
Oh, yes, indeed, of course, because you have to shed them out.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you have to have shedding boxes, but if you catch those shrimp and if you hand-pick through them, you'll see the ones that are, you know, we quote, call them busters, they're big, and then you would shed those out and then immediately bring them into the restaurant. So there's a way to do that, but it does take a little bit of technique and labor, and you've got to be aware you've got the proper water. But you can do that, and they are sure are good. And there's nothing like that soft shell crab or soft shell crawfish or soft shell shrimp. That is truly a delicacy.
Mike, I know Sunday is National Loggers and National Farmers Day. Talk about the importance of the loggers and the farmers in Louisiana, please.
Well, when you talk about, you know, let's talk about with the loggers. The loggers, that's more than $1 billion-plus per year, $1 billion-plus. And when you add the value to it, it's $4 billion in our economy. And if you look at the number of loggers, it's a pretty tight group, you know, less than 1,000 loggers in the state. And they log 15 million acres of farmed timber. That's a big deal. It's one of the discussions we're having with the European Union and others because they don't quite understand. You know, they think we keep cutting, you know, virgin forest. These are farmed plantations. And they harvest at 12 years, then at 18 years, and constantly replant. And then we have about 3.6 million acres of bottomlands that we can harvest about once every 40 years. But it is a farm, and it is extremely important to our economy. For many parishes, that is the entire economy, the entire economy. And then on the other part, you talk about carbon sequestration. And if you talk about all the wonderful things that it does for the environment, so wildlife, et cetera, so it's a huge part of our ecosystem. On the agricultural side, our direct agricultural output is over $8.6 billion. And so when you add those together, you know, direct to the farmers, you know, we're at $10 to $12 billion. And then we put that in the economy, it's $50 to $60 billion. So it's a huge part of our overall economy. And over 275,000 people work in agriculture and forestry. So it's the largest sector of our economy in that respect.
Thank you, Mike. A pleasure as always. You be careful today. I don't want to be interviewing an alligator next week, okay?
Oh, no, yeah, that would be hard to get the sound, right? You'd have to hold it down. You'd have to put that microphone down close to his mouth.
I don't want that. No, I want to talk to you, not it. Thank you, sir. Have a good time. Tell Billy hello. Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, 655, 5 till 7. Traffic now, WWL. 7:15, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Government's been shut down 8 days plus, and we're talking to John Diamond, the Senior Director of the Center for Tax and Budget Policy at Rice University's Baker Institute to talk about the effect that it may have on the economy. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking the time with us. Tell me about, before we go into what a prolonged government shutdown could do to the economy, the state of it now, because I tried to get a handle on it between inflation, between job reports, between stock market. There are so many things involved. I don't know how you can say what the state of the economy is. Thoughts?
That's a really good point. I'm right now the data is a little bit all over the place. And I think that's representative of the fact that we kind of live in two separate economies. There's the tech world, which is booming.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the rest of the economy, which has been stagnating, to put it lightly, over the last 6 to 8 months.
Let's talk about the tech world. Who would be involved in that from the street level? From, you understand what I'm saying? Who would be benefiting in this economy?
You know, from this economy, so currently you have a lot of people, they're building out data centers and stuff like that. So people that are in construction and energy, financing of energy products,
tech,
those people will all be benefiting. But that's a pretty small group of people.
So the rest of the economy that are looking at stagnant wages and rising prices, that would be people, pretty much everybody else?
That's pretty much everybody else. Yeah.
So with that being said, what effect does a government shutdown have on either one of those two groups?
Well, it's the government shutdown affects basically a third group immediately, and then it'll have indirect effects on everyone else. So, you know, that third group is all federal employees. Anyone that contracts with the federal government, so if your business relies on federal contracts for revenues. And then anyone that lives in an area that's highly concentrated with one of those two groups. So if you're in the Washington, D.C. area, there's both a lot of federal workers and a lot of federal contracts. And so a prolonged shutdown could start to impact the revenues of, say, dry cleaners or other businesses in the area, even though they're not federally operated. So those are the people that are most impacted currently. You know, as it goes on, those impacts start to spread to the rest of us. And the other group of people that would be impacted is anybody that's currently using a government service. So if you've just applied for a passport and you need to get it relatively quickly, you're probably in trouble.
So when it comes to contractors, because I want to talk about back pay for a second and furloughed workers, I get text often whenever this happens as government shutdown, which seems a lot more and more frequent, for people saying that's not true. Contract workers do not receive back pay. Is that money lost forever? Is it like an unsold ticket at a concert? I'm trying to figure out who it is that would be a contract worker for the government. Maybe you can give me some examples.
You know, people, companies that lay new asphalts on roads, any kind of transportation construction. There's a lot of research contracts, health, you know, people working in the health industry, get often have some type of government contract. So it's a pretty wide group of people, universities, but yeah, that money is lost forever. I mean, if you don't get it paid back at the end, then you never receive it. And that's, you know, CBO put out a report on the 2018-19 shutdown, which lasted as longest in history. It lasted 35 days. The total economic effects were about $11 billion. Mm-hmm. And those were split between quarter one and quarter two. It was $3 billion in the fourth quarter of 2018 and $8 billion in the first quarter of 2019. About $3 billion of that was permanently lost. And about $8 billion was just delayed and then showed up in quarters three and four the next year.
I'm going to take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. You know what I'd like to talk about? The economy, some of the signs that it's showing, about some warnings that are out there. And also when it comes to just the average person that's not in tech, how they should look at the economy and how they should gauge it. Because some people say, well, you know what? The 401k is doing fine, so I'm good. However, they're not doing so good when it comes with day-to-day bills, and maybe the 401k is doing great, but they got massive credit card debt trying to keep up with inflation. We'll talk about all that when we come back. Our guest, John Diamond, a senior director of the Center for Tax and Budget Policy at Rice University's Baker Institution, talking about the effects of a government shutdown on an economy that could already be showing some signs of distress. 721 traffic now, WWL. 727, Tommy Tucker, WWL. The government shutdown continues. John Diamond is our guest, senior director of the Center for Tax and Budget Policy at Rice University's Baker Institute, talking about the effect that it could have on an economy that, professor, would you say is fragile or showing some signs of fraying? How would you describe it?
It's definitely fragile, especially the labor market. I mean, we've all seen the numbers. You know, over the last 4 months, we've averaged about 22,000 new jobs. You know, at least 25% of the people that are unemployed have been unemployed for longer than 27 weeks. And the unemployment rate for recent college graduates has been spiking, and it's about a point higher than the economy-wide unemployment rate. And so those are all signals that companies just aren't hiring people. If you get laid off or you graduate college, it's really hard to find a great job right now.
And I would think that if companies are hiring less people, that means more people are applying for the jobs, which means the salaries are driven down, or not necessarily?
Wage growth has definitely been slowing as well. And so, you know, companies are trying to cut costs. And I think part of that is we do see companies being, their margins are being compressed, and that's probably mostly related to the tariffs. And they're making up for it by trying to reduce.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
The cost of labor.
And meanwhile, back at the store, tell me about inflation.
Unfortunately, inflation has found a home right about 3%, and it doesn't really seem to be budging. And you know, I think the hope is that eventually we can get it down to 2. The fear is that it may spike back upwards as we move into the fall and people start, you know, shopping for Christmas goods, and the supply is probably relatively constrained, given the tariffs and the lack of imports.
So tell me about inflation and prices, because I think people conflate the two. Inflation, the rate of inflation might come down, but prices rarely come down, right?
That's right. Inflation is the rate of growth over time. And that's just, you know, when we had 9% inflation 2 years ago, that just meant prices were going up by 9%. Well, prices are still going up. They're only going up by 3%. So even when the Fed hits its target of 2%, prices are going up 2% per year. So they never come down. You never go back to where you were. You have to adjust to the new normal, which is right now much higher prices.
And do wages tend to keep up with inflation?
Normally what will happen is after an inflationary period, wages, wage growth will speed up a little over time and eventually you'll catch up. We're not really seeing that this time. Wages did speed up for a little bit, but again, now I think wages are where companies are trying to cut cost overall.
Thank you, Professor. Very interesting. Hope you come back. Professor John Diamond, Senior Director of the Center for Tax and Budget Policy at Rice University's Baker Institute, 7:30, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. 7:46, 14 till 8, nothing will be a positive influence. Nothing will fix stuff like winning a game, and that's what the Saints did on Sunday. Steve Geller joins us now, WWL Sports Director, to talk about it. How you doing, Steve?
Man, like you mentioned it, Tommy, this week's been a whole lot brighter since coming off that victory.
It's just all the difference in the world. Let me ask you about some of your takeaways from the game. Kool-Aid McKinstry, I was talking to Deuce about this yesterday. To me, it's all about confidence. Hopefully, I think maybe now he might have the confidence, the short-term memory to go out there and play some good cornerback. What do you think?
Yeah, when you come up with the NFC Defensive Player of the Week, those two key picks in the fourth quarter, definitely a nice confidence boost for the young cornerback. Just want to see his game continuing to develop. And, you know, as a case with the Saints all around on this roster now, you just have a lot of young talent being asked to step up into starting roles. And it's been a process, a little baby steps taking forward every week. And hopefully that Kool-Aid, we keep seeing that progress and developing into a legit starting corner in the NFL, should have a not so tough of a test this week against a Patriots squad that doesn't have any dominating wideouts.
So Chase Young, I see the injury report here, limited practice. Is that different than before? Has it been limited practice throughout the season?
Tommy, you could like sound the bells. Hallelujah. We'll take limited right now. Mm-hmm. He has not been practicing this entire time, so this is a positive step for him as well. We know he's the Saints' main pass rusher, that guy that's going to get the pressure on opposing quarterbacks, and that's been missing big time. So Coach Kellen Moore was kind of coy with the fact of, will he be ready for Sunday's game? He's progressing in a positive manner right now and could be in action against the Patriots, which would be great to pressure that young quarterback in Drake May. But no, this is definitely progress for him. He hasn't been out of practice at all, so we'll take limited right now.
I'd be coy as well. Ain't none of the Patriots' damn business what's going on with the Saints. Tell me about Justin Reed. How serious is the, you know, a concussion is always serious. How's the old saying go? A concussion is minor if it's somebody else's. If it's yours, it's not so minor. But will he play or not, or do we know?
He's still in the concussion protocol. A positive sign was the fact that he was limited yesterday. I was surprised to see that. Did not practice for Reed, as you mentioned, suffering that concussion against the New York Giants. We're going to wait to see how he progresses through a number of tests for the concussion protocol. Him practicing in a limited fashion was one of the steps yesterday, so we'll see how those results end up coming for today and then tomorrow, obviously, the final injury report with game statuses. But right now, things are positive for Reed. Like I said, he was out there in practice at limited fashion yesterday. Wasn't expecting that when you're in the concussion protocol. So I don't think it's anything serious.
Speaking of confidence, how big was that? I think it was 83 yards, maybe 55 yards in the air, the touchdown pass to Rashid Shaheed from a Daratla.
Yeah, that was awesome to see. In the dome, you could kind of feel the Saints fans collectively holding their breath, waiting for that big play to connect. We finally saw it in a nice W. And, yeah, they've been pretty timid about stretching the field. I guess that's easy to, you know, safe to say right there. Maybe this will open up the passing game a little more. I know Coach Kellen Moore was trying to, you know, bring things along a little slowly. But it was great to see just unleashing a little bit. And we know that Rashid Shaheed has got that burner speed. Spencer Rattler talked about the fact that it's really difficult, almost impossible to overthrow this guy. But getting that big play, definitely key for this team, besides the fact of those takeaways. Hopefully both can continue going forward for this Saints squad that, you know, trying to rack up those wins now after those four early losses, put that behind you, and now let's string together some W's.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up here. We come back talking about the Patriots on Sunday. You can meet up with Mike Dettelier, Steve Geller for weekend kickoff at the Treasure Chest Casino this evening. They're going to review the Saints injury report and the black and gold as they get ready to take on the Patriots, as we're talking about here. Plus, they're going to preview Tulane's Thursday night matchup tonight against East Carolina with NOLA.com's Gary Smith at 4:40, then talking Tigers at 5:10 with Blake Ruffino of the AYS Sports Network as LSU prepares to host South Carolina. Then at 6:10, they'll get into some Saints and Pelicans practice notes with team reporter Aaron Summers. So it's a lot coming up tonight. Stick around. Thursday night football then at 7, Giants taking on the Eagles on WWL 870 AM, 105.3 FM and the Odyssey app. The big headline there, though, the takeaway, join Mike and Steve at the Treasure Chest today starting at 4. 7:51 traffic now, WWL. 7:58, quickly back to Steve Geller. Saints going to New England to take on the Patriots here in the Dome. What am I talking about? Saints taking on the Patriots here in the Dome. The Patriots are one game behind the Bills in the AFC East. I would prefer to play the Jets or the Dolphins at this juncture. Let me get back to the Saints real quick. Is Taysom Hill a second-string quarterback or Tyler Shuck, or do we know?
No, that's still unclear of how they plan to utilize Taysom. He's definitely listed as a quarterback now, not on the tight end depth chart anymore. And as of right now, if you look at the Saints, the way things are situated going into this game, he is listed as QB2. So we'll see if he ends up being the immediate backup to Spencer Rattler in this matchup while Tyler Shuck's the number three signal caller.
How important was it to get Taysom and Foster Moreau back?
Oh, massive, Tommy. Not just for what they provide you on the field, but these guys in the locker room, definitely pillars of leadership for this black and gold bunch. And, you know, I think coaches, players, fans, anytime Taysom Hill is on the sideline, steps on the field, everybody gets excited. Mm-hmm. Great, great, great job by them of having him leading that hoot at chant to start the game against the New York Giants. Definitely fired up the home crowd right from the get.
I think they turned a corner. We'll see on Sunday. And, of course, we'll be listening to you. Coverage starts at 8 o'clock here on WWL, and we'll be listening this evening for you and Mike from Treasure Chest. Thank you, Steve Geller.
Thank you, Tommy.
How's that young man doing at Rummel?
They got a game tonight, 7 p.m., so after the Treasure Chest, I'm off to see Rummel.
There you go, JV.
No, it's a varsity game tonight.
Oh, good. And he's playing?
He's on the sideline.
Awesome.
But
he might get in. Who knows? Thank you, Steve Geller. Appreciate it. We'll take a break. Come back, WWL. 8:14 now on this Thursday morning, October 9th. Dr. B joins us, our friend, Chief Medical Officer of People's Health, to talk about flu season. It's officially here. Dr. B, how you doing?
Doing great, Tommy. How about you?
I am okay, sir. Let's talk about the importance of getting an annual flu shot and dispel some common vaccine myths. So I guess let's start with the basics. How does a vaccine work?
Sure. So it's pretty simple. You know, what happens when your body gets exposed to a virus, your immune system kicks in and it starts creating proteins, which we call antibodies. And you want to think of those antibodies as like little soldiers that are there to defend the systems of your body. And they can find foreign substances, things like viruses and even other things, and they can destroy them before you actually get sick. So each time you encounter a new virus, your immune system actually learns how to create these new antibodies that are specifically designed to target the virus or whatever, foreign, you know, substance is entering your body. And that process, though, takes a lot of time, and it leaves you at risk for developing symptoms and getting really sick while those antibodies are being created. So that's where vaccines come in. What they do is they actually teach your body how to fight the virus and any other germs before you actually get exposed to them. So your body's ready to go.
So how does the flu shot work?
Yeah, so the flu shot itself, we have a couple of different types, but usually they are a weakened or an inactivated version of the flu virus itself. They cannot give you the flu. They absolutely cannot give you the flu, but they do trigger that response from your immune system to start creating those antibodies that, are going to help your body fight off the flu virus if you do get exposed to it. So in the future, when you get exposed, instead of having to wait for your body to create those antibodies, those little soldiers, your body's going to remember and immediately jump into action and hopefully block you from developing the flu.
Is it normal for the flu shot to cause some side effects?
Yeah, I tell patients this all the time. It's very normal, and it does not mean that, the shot gave you the flu. That's really important. It actually, what it really means is that it's working, that the flu shot's doing what it's supposed to. It's supposed to trigger that reaction in your body to start responding and creating the antibodies. And so you may get a little bit of soreness where the shot's given. You can even get some generalized muscle aches. Some people say they have headaches. And occasionally, people even have a little bit of a low-grade fever. But usually, those side effects are, not very severe. They don't last very long. Usually, just go to bed. When you wake up the next morning, you'll feel fine. And it's much better than what you would feel with an actual flu infection.
I don't want to downplay that at all, but sometimes you kind of talk yourself into having these side effects, don't you?
Yeah. Well, you're kind of anticipating them. And so you're like, wait a minute, is my throat scratchy? Mm-hmm. Do I have a little headache? And it's probably something mild from the vaccine. But again, nothing to be concerned about.
Why do we need a flu shot every year?
Yeah, so this is really important because I hear a lot of people say, well, I got one last year. I don't need to worry about it. But keep in mind that viruses always evolve, and the flu virus in particular changes every single year. And so we have to update the flu shot that we're giving based on what we're seeing all the way around the world. So in Australia, you know, we'll look at what they got flu-wise, what types of flu, and then we'll create our vaccine for this year. And that protection that you get from the flu shot, keep in mind, it doesn't last forever. It usually lasts about 6 months, but those antibodies will start to break down and the immunity fades away. And so that means you're going to need another another vaccine to boost that immunity when the new flu season comes.
Who is it that should get a flu shot?
Really, I tell everybody should get a flu shot. And in particular, it's anyone 6 months or older. There's very rare exceptions. You can talk to your doctor. They will let you know if there is an exception, but it's extremely rare. In particular, I really encourage people who are older, you know, certainly people that are over the age of 50, children that are under 2, you know, may have less ability to fight off the flu. People who are pregnant in particular, it's very, very critical. And then anyone who has a chronic health condition or a weakened immune system, things like diabetes and heart disease, you know, catching the flu can be extremely dangerous.
Are there different types of flu vaccines, or do they come out with one each year and that's for everybody?
Yeah, they come out with one that has the types of flu virus vaccine in it that you need. But there are two different types. There's a shot and there's actually a nasal spray that you can get. But we only use the nasal spray in people that are very, very healthy. Typically, you're going to get the flu shot. That's the best way to go.
I want to talk about some myths when we come back. I want to take an early break for traffic here. We're talking to Dr. B, Dr. Brent Wallace, Chief Medical Officer of People's Health. It's October, flu season officially here. It's time to get a flu shot, and that's what we're talking about. 820 traffic, WWL. 824, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Dr. B, Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Brent Wallace at People's Health. And we're talking about flu shots and it being flu season, and we're talking about some myths. So, Doc, if somebody says the flu's just a bad cold, what would you tell them?
Yeah, I hear that a lot, but if you've ever had the flu, you know that is not true. It feels like someone beat you with a baseball bat, and you know, because it can cause a lot more severe symptoms. Some may be milder, but in general, flu can be much more serious than the common cold. It's going to cause more severe symptoms and could result in some complications that even require hospitalization.
I'm healthy. I don't need a flu shot.
That's another popular one. But you know, the recommendation is everyone 6 months and older should get a flu shot, even people that are totally healthy. And while most cases of the flu are probably not going to be too terrible, like I mentioned, hundreds of thousands of people go to the hospital every year, and tens of thousands of people actually die from flu. So that's why it's so important for you to get a flu shot to protect yourself. But keep in mind, you're not just protecting yourself. You're also protecting people around you. You know, you're going to, the holidays are coming up. You're going to be seeing maybe your parents, your grandparents. The worst thing in the world would be to expose them to the flu, because they're going to possibly have more severe complications.
If I stay home when I feel sick, that's enough. I don't need to get a shot.
Yeah, I mean, it is good to stay home when you feel sick. I think that's important. You don't want to spread things around. But one thing to keep in mind is people who have extremely mild cases of the flu, or maybe don't even have any recognizable symptoms, could still spread it. And that can be up to 30% of people that could be carrying the flu virus through this season. And again, you could infect somebody who may have a more severe reaction to the flu.
What would you say to the people that say, flu shot doesn't work, last time I got it, I still got the flu?
Yeah, I hear that a lot, and it does happen on occasion, but there's a couple of things to keep in mind. You know, flu shots, just like any vaccine, are never 100% effective. And so some people actually may still get the flu or flu-like symptoms even after they've been vaccinated. But in general, that flu tends to be less severe if you've been vaccinated. The other thing to keep in mind is that the flu vaccine is not immediate. It actually takes a couple of weeks for your body to create those antibodies that you need. And so sometimes you'll get a flu shot and get the flu a couple of weeks later, and it's because you haven't had time to create that protection and everything. And then the other thing that does happen on occasion is we're not perfect, and so we have to reformulate that flu vaccine every year, and occasionally it doesn't cover all the different types of flu that can be floating around, and so you may get exposed to something that the vaccine is not protecting you from.
What would you say to people that don't think flu shots are safe?
Yeah, it's just not true. I mean, hundreds of millions of Americans have safely received the flu shot over the past 50 years, and there's constant ongoing research. They're constantly developing new types of vaccines to cover different strains of the flu, new delivery methods and new dosing. So there is just so much research on it, and all of it has shown that flu shots are very, very safe. So if you have any concerns about it, talk to your doctor. They can really explain the science to you, but it is very important that you consider getting one.
Some very valuable information. Is there a best time to get a flu shot, Doc?
Yeah, there really is. You know, so here in Louisiana, you know, it still was almost 90 degrees yesterday. And so we're spending a lot of time outdoors, and you tend to see the flu when it gets colder, when people start going indoors, and especially around the holidays, like I mentioned, more people congregating together. That's where we see the flu increase. It tends to be kind of the holiday time, and then especially during Mardi Gras. And so you want to get your vaccine right now, because you need a few weeks for those antibodies to develop. If you wait all the way until December or January, you're not going to be protected through the holidays.
Thank you, Doc. Appreciate your time as always. Dr. Brent Wallace, Chief Medical Officer of People's Health. You can visit the People's Health Medicare Center in Metairie. Find out more at 3017 Vets. That's right between North Causeway and Trader Joe's. Appointments are recommended, but walk-ins are welcome, and I think we're approaching the open enrollment period. You can also visit the website peopleshealth.com, or you can always call them at 1-800-978-9765. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Meg Farris, a WWL Louisiana reporter, about, believe it or not, an ancient Roman tombstone that showed up in a New Orleans backyard. We'll dig into the details, if you will, with Meg Farris about that. And before that, we're going to talk about with Darlene Costanza with Crime Stoppers about that. Thank you, Dave. We're joined by Darlene Costanza, the president and CEO of Crime Stoppers, to talk about the Derrick Groves capture yesterday. How you doing, Darlene?
I'm doing great. How are you, Tom?
I'm okay. Thanks for taking the time with us. I saw you at the press conference yesterday, and I got a couple of things for you. Want to first of all talk about the effort, if you will, that it took You know, the example I make, but this is like a very minor example, is, you know, if you get a running quarterback and you can't contain him, then all of a sudden it's all over the place, right? It's this to the nth degree, because you're talking about a needle in a haystack here, and once somebody leaves the area, you're talking about the entire country, entire world, to try to track him down almost, pretty much, right?
Yeah, see, it's, obviously it was a long 5 months for everybody involved, and I'm sure including Mr. Groves. But throughout all of this process, and, you know, we spent a lot of time with Crime Stoppers, you know, promoting the information out there to let people know, you know, who was missing and who's now been captured. We've received thousands of tips. And I think what that shows is the volume of individuals out there who are very concerned. And certainly if you're a victim of any one of these escaped inmates' crimes, an alleged victim, you know, you're rightfully going to be concerned. And, you know, for us, it was a lot of man hours working with law enforcement. You know, I said this yesterday at the press conference. I cannot thank them enough, the officers, the task force members, those who, you know, put in the hours. I can tell you that for us, you know, we're a small organization, so we don't have a backup crew. And, you know, I was getting calls 24 hours a day from the offices looking for information when tips came in. And, yes, we had tips coming in saying he was in multiple locations. And there was a lot of times that we felt like they were close. But, you know, yesterday, obviously, was the right information.
But you did say they were all vetted, right? You went through all of them. You didn't ignore anything.
Yes. No, we went through everything, and you know, everything was passed through to a task force with the state police. And yes, and it, when people would, when we needed new information from the callers, we would, you know, respond to them, asking them to send additional information, ask particular questions. And through the process with Crime Stoppers, you know, again, you're an anonymous tipster, so it's all done by a tip number. Mm-hmm. They were responding. So it wasn't just the initial tips that had to be vetted. It was all of the follow-up. And again, that was thousands. On Mr. Groves alone, it was hundreds.
He I disagree with you in that it was a long 5 months for him. I don't really care what it was for him, because he should have been in jail, and he wasn't. He should have been in Angola, and that's where he's going now. But when it comes to the people that helped him, is Crime Stoppers involved at all with any of that or not, Darlene?
Anyone, obviously, we're taking tips on anyone who was involved in this incident. And yes, early on, we had information of those who may have been helping with different escapees. And certainly, we are encouraging folks, if you have that information, send it along. I mean, this is all going to be vetted and investigated. And yes, people will be brought to justice if they were an accomplice to this.
Thank you, Darlene. Any final thoughts?
I really appreciate everybody's efforts in working with us. We're, you know, we're very honored to be part of this, and it's a good day for us.
It is a good day. Thank you, Darlene Cazanza, President and CEO of Crime Stoppers. We're going to take a break, come back, talk to Meg Ferris from WWL Louisiana about, believe it or not, a tombstone from the Roman times found in a New Orleans backyard. What? We'll talk about it when we come back, WWL. 8:47, 13 till 9, I think it was Jed Clampett who once said, "The Dickens, you say." And that's the only thing I could think of when I saw Meg Ferris's story about this, how should I say it, Shotgunius Riverbendus? Maybe that'd be the Latin for it. Meg Ferris joins us now, WWL Louisiana reporter. How you doing, Meg?
Good morning. Very familiar with the Clampetts. Watched them growing up.
Yes. I guess you've been, you've spent this morning CrossFitious as well, right?
I'm already back from, of course, today was Arm Day, my favorite.
I know that. Tell me about this tablet that was found. This is an amazing story. Tell me the story.
Okay, Tommy, it doesn't get better than this. You know how all huge stories lead back to New Orleans? You know, you have a president assassinated in the 60s, and there's a New Orleans connection. There's always a connection here with a big story. Right. So this goes back to 100 A.D., around that time. When a soldier in the Roman Imperial Navy died, was buried, he was in his 40s, and around the 1800s, they're building something, and this is about an hour north of Rome, they're building something, and they unearth these marble tombstones, these grave markers, and they're very, very detailed in ancient Latin, not in current Latin. Okay, so... they put them in a museum. Fast forward to 1943, bombings, World War II, and that museum was bombed. And then this headstone is missing. Now, fast forward to this spring, 2025, from 1943, and a couple is weeding their garden. They had been there 6 years. They had never pulled up all the vines in the backyard, and they pull up the vines, and this ancient tombstone, this marble engraved tombstone in ancient Latin, is in the backyard. I mean, Tommy, it doesn't get better than this. This story has gone viral across the whole country, and people are just wondering, how in the world did it get there?
What amazes me is that it was an anthropologist, I think, that found this, because had it been a guy like me, who knows what I'd have thought. I'd have thought it was a prop from Disney, because the condition that this thing is in is amazing, is it not?
It's in great condition. It wasn't like deep, deep in the ground. And you're right. So she Googled it, and then she AI'd it, and it told her everything.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I don't know if you've heard, but Mint's premium wireless is $15 a month. But I'd like to offer one other perk. We have no stores. That means no small talk. Crazy weather we're having. No, it's not. It's just weather. It is an introvert's dream. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer. First 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Thing wrong. So everyone out there who's scared that stupid AI is going to get them out of it did. Everything it told her was 100% wrong. So she talks to Dr. Ryan Gray at UNO, an archaeologist, and he's like, I think we have something. He gets Tulane involved, and that's Dr. Suzanne Alusnia. She is fluent or can read this ancient Latin. She has all the connections and knows all the books, not AI, books and databases and people to go to, and she discovers that it's missing from this museum, about an hour north of a port city, about an hour north of Rome. Now, let me tell you, it all started with the Preservation Resource Center, who talks to Dr. Gray, or has Dr. Gray from UNO do an editorial about this stone. And that's how it kind of has taken off into this huge international story. So she discovers everything about it. She goes over to meet some museum people, she calls them, emails them, goes over and meets them this summer and says, we have it, we're going to repatriate it. And I said, Dr. Lucenia, did you just want to put it in your suitcase and bring it back to them? She said, no, because then you're going to, you know, be strip searched at the airport. But anyway, she said the proper channels is you have to call the FBI Arts Crime Division. They come, they get it from the homeowners in the Riverbend in a little old shotgun in New Orleans, and they have it in possession. Now, they claim the government shutdown was they couldn't tell me anything. They couldn't talk to me about what the next step is. But the tentative plan is to repatriate it back to the museum next summer.
Why am I imagining the end of Indiana Jones here?
Because it just
where it gets packaged up,
true.
It gets packaged up in some wooden container and then just put in the back of a ware. Do we know what it said, Meg? What the translation was? Tell me about what it said and what about the guy himself and all that.
So lots of abbreviations I'm learned were done with this ancient Roman, and they had everything on the tombstone.
Well, to be fair, they had to chisel it in, right? I mean, it wasn't like
correct.
You weren't, you know, word processor here, so I would use abbreviations as well, especially if you had a little carpal tunnel going or something, right?
Absolutely, and there's no liquid paper or anything.
No, liquid stone. If you make a mistake, that's a need to think about that. Making a mistake, what do? You got two letters left, and you mess it up. It's like, oh goodness gracious, here we go. So what did it say? Really?
But here's what I learned. So they didn't just put their name and the date. They put everything about you. They put all your heirs because he didn't have children. They put all of his heirs, you know, his titles, everything he'd done. It's very detailed about this man's life and, you know, what he did in the Imperial Navy. And
tell me a little about it. Do you remember what it was that he did?
You know, I don't remember. I know it was a list of his heirs. Mm-hmm. And it was, I don't remember all those details about exactly was on this.
Did you see it, Meg? Did you see it or did you touch it?
No, because they called the FBI, and the next day an agent showed up, gave him a receipt, you know, one ancient 2,000-year-old marble headstone, and we took a shot of the receipt. It's in our story, and so, no, they have it, and again, they wouldn't tell me how the process works to repatriate it. Because they said they weren't allowed to talk to me because the government shut down, which was really, you know, that was disappointing. But anyway, I have to tell you what was exciting was these people who for a living are scholars at Tulane and UNO and the PRC, and they do this for a living and they study it. They were as excited as you or I would be if we won that Powerball, okay?
I bet they were. Yes,
their whole life you wait for something real. And your whole life you see all this junk, okay? But
the only thing I wish is that it could have stayed here and gone on exhibit here maybe at the New Orleans Museum of Art, because I think it would have been or at some venue, it would have been amazing to be able to go and see this that dates back to what?
Good idea. Until they have to bring it back next summer, I'm going to recommend that to them.
Great
idea.
I'd love to see it. Thank you, Meg.
Okay.
Go flip some tires and do whatever you do. I don't know. 855 5 till 9. Meg Ferris, WWL Louisiana reporter. Time for traffic now on WWL. Gas starter. All right. Thank you, Dave. We're going to talk about AI now. And, you know, Dave, you were mentioning earlier this morning about the fake Dolly Parton video, and she's now saying she's not dying, she's not dead. The AI-generated thing, Meg Ferris just now telling us with this from 100 AD, the tablet they found in Carrollton, believe it or not, how that got there, long story, but that they went to AI to find out about it. And Meg said, well, you know what, if you think AI is going to take your job, maybe not, because everything they found out was wrong. We're going to talk about AI slop right now. And with that, we welcome in Adam Nemeroff, Assistant Provost for Innovations in Learning, Teaching, and Technology at Quinnipiac University. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
It's good to be on the show. Thank you for having me, Tommy.
Thanks for taking the time. Tell me about AI slop.
Yeah, so I'm not a professor at CU. I work in the administration, and I teach as an adjunct, and I work a lot really closely with researchers. And one of the things I found early on in my process exploring AI over these first few years in this kind of latest generation with AI is that AI slop seems to be popping up everywhere. So I started to notice in the news whether like you mentioned the Dolly Parton video, there are these examples where you find things and you're like, is that real? It looks somewhat real. Maybe it's awkward in ways, or there's something out of place that kind of sets something in your brain off as, you know, maybe that's not what I think it is. And so I got really interested in that and ended up putting together this piece for the conversation that explored it a bit further with some actual examples.
So how do you define AI slop, or is it like the old Supreme Court thing with pornography where you just know it when you see it?
Yeah, so it really is kind of examples of low to mid quality content, and that content could be video, it could be images, audio, text, a mix of that, that's created with AI tools. So that's usually the tell. And when they're created, they're often created with little concern for that accuracy and quality. In a lot of cases, it's almost like what we've seen with bots. I know my phone's getting blown up with text messages lately that sound like, hey, I haven't seen you in a while. How are you? And they sound human-like, and they're often these kind of bot farms and other things using these AI tools in kind of indiscriminate ways to just gain somebody's attention and sustain it. And that gets really problematic when you get into some of the varied examples of this with videos and audio and social media posts and all that. But they're all kind of these low mid-quality generative pieces from AI systems.
Tell me some of the things you mentioned in the piece that you wrote that people might identify with that they've seen and maybe up until now thought were real.
Yeah, the one that really took off was there was an example of a kid holding a puppy that came up in one of the storms during Hurricane Helene that ended up being this kind of image that confused rescuers. They end up trying to look for this person that didn't exist. But on social media, it kind of took off and went viral. It also became a kind of key piece of criticizing the federal government's response efforts. And all of that was in response to something that was completely fabricated. It wasn't real. And so there were also examples when during the fires out west, you know, in Hollywood, there were examples of the Hollywood sign on fire. None of that was real. Mm. And each of those, when you look at it really, really closely and you kind of bring that skeptical mind to it, you notice that it's maybe something's off there. And I could talk about this a little bit more as we talk. Mm-hmm. There's examples now where it's getting harder to tell, and that's a whole nother set of challenges in this space.
Yeah, well, let's talk about it now, because my next question was, is it improving, and is it improving exponentially, and is AI helping AI improve the AI slop now that we've gone completely down the AI rabbit hole?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the self-improving piece, most of the systems are not set up that way yet. That is something you'll hear from the major research labs as a goal, is that over time, that will be a key aspect of continuing to make these things more capable and helpful. But right now, we are seeing better models. Just this week, I was actually interviewed a couple of days ago on CBS Money Watch for an article about OpenAI's new model called Sora 2. And they have this TikTok kind of Instagram Reels-like shorts app that lets you generate AI videos. And if you use the first Sora model, you could typically tell that, you know, these things were artificial in some extent. You'd find something out of place. You'd find something that defied the laws of physics, that kind of thing in the image. But now they are really, really good. So they're able to correct for more of that in the production. And it makes it really tough to see. So you have examples of deep fakes of celebrities on the platform. And all of these things are going to continue to play out in our media diets in different ways. And I'm definitely personally concerned about it because it is. It's tough to tell what is real, what's fake, and that contributes to misinformation and other things.
So, for example, if I wanted to, and I'm trying to understand the way these things work, if I wanted to, first of all, it is this Sora thing, you got to subscribe to that, right, or not?
I believe you have to pay for it, but the app is open. I don't know if they changed that with the most recent model, but that's, it is the most popular free app in the App Store, so you can definitely experience the things that others are creating on it. They're also, you know, it launched in a fairly viral way, so it's kind of taking off on its own meteoric rise. And so that you can download the app from the App Store now, and it's trending pretty highly. But with those things, the access barriers, you know, if it's paid, it's only, you know, maybe $20 a month, something like that. couple cups of coffee, and people are able to do this. And that's why bad actors are able to use these things as well.
So you can put together whatever you want. And for example, I know you gave the example, and I don't want to offend anybody here, with Shrimp Jesus, but you can tell me about that.
Yeah, so there are the content guidelines are largely determined by the platform. And in that case, a lot of those things are okay as far as being permissible on the platform in their terms of use. But then there are all sorts of other examples. Like right now, there's been a whole backlash about product placement that brand owners and controllers don't necessarily want. So OpenAI now, a few days into, is actually changing their policy to restrict certain use cases with brand placement and things like that. But you could make a deep fake with Ronald McDonald for a few days. I saw one from the New York Times showing a Matrix scene firing hamburgers from Ronald McDonald at one of the reporters in there who is as a Neo kind of a character. And yeah, it's incredible to see what you can do with just a few words and a prompt.
Robin Williams' daughter took to social media, I think, to say, please stop doing this. Do you know what was going on there?
Yeah, I caught that story a couple days ago. It seemed like people were using, there was a Robin Williams avatar that people had basically made and were using to like have him speak to things since his passing. And, you know, she pointed out, I think her reaction is the most telling part of this. That's unsettling. You know, there are people using AI to train it on their loved ones' memories and writings and other things to allow some engagement with that. But that's a distilled version of that individual. And there's an element of consent with it. You know, like in his daughter's case, she wasn't looking for that, and she knew her dad didn't want to see that. So I think that's a really interesting and cautionary one to share. There's other examples too with MLK and JFK and other. I saw an Abraham Lincoln one the other day. And these are all just things that people can make really easily, and the guardrails don't necessarily stop it.
Let me talk about where this is headed when we come back, because I know I saw Sean Astin, I think, is the president of one of the actors' union, SAG, maybe talking about AI actors and how that could replace real actors, not on the stage, I don't think, unless you're talking about holograms, but in film. And how good is this likely to get? 919, we're talking about AI-generated slop with Adam Nemeroff, Assistant Provost for Innovations in Learning, Teaching, and Technology at Quinnipiac. I get it out. Say it out. Say it for me.
Quinnipiac.
That's what I said. University. And we'll pick it up when we come back. Any questions, comments, 504-260-1870. I'll pass them along. We come back. WWL. It is currently 9:25. We're talking to Adam Nemeroff, Assistant Provost for Innovations in Learning, Teaching, and Technology at Quinnipiac University, about AI slop. And for those just tuning in, Adam, give me a definition of AI slop again, please.
Yeah, so AI slop is low and mid-level content that's generated by AI systems. It could be text, audio, video, or images. And they tend to be created without much intention around how quality that content is. It really is there just to grab your attention, not necessarily to fulfill the, you know, a quality metric.
So what isn't AI slop? And I guess I'm wondering, for those that would have nefarious purposes to have a politician, because look, first of all, you got to follow the chain of this, right? People see it on social media. They want to believe it because they're kind of looking for what they want to believe in the first place, with confirmation bias. Then the algorithms feed them what they want to see.
Sure.
And as a result of that, it's nonstop. It's one after the other after the other. I guess just like, you know, impressions, after you give somebody 30 impressions, they begin to notice it, or it begins to eat its way into, like an earworm into their head, maybe. I don't know. But how advanced is AI when it comes to people that they care? They don't want it to be low quality. They want a good, high quality fake to either bilk somebody out of their money, start a war, do whatever.
Yeah, so those are great examples of kind of where the, you know, bad actors can essentially use these things. There's all sorts of examples that are documented going back to our last presidential election. There's a deep fake of Biden that told voters in New Hampshire not to go to the polls. These things are out there and being used in bad ways. And I think it's important for people to know that these things are often being placed in places where you have the attention economy kind of at play. So that's why you see it on social media. You see it in other places where there could be a potential financial upside. It could be something where the goal is to get more content out there, not good content out there, but it could play into the algorithms of the different social media platforms as well. They could reflect a viewpoint that you've already shown interest in based on your friends and your likes and your other engagement. And that's kind of where it starts from.
Have you seen students use a lot of AI when it comes to papers and those kind of things?
We should have a whole other episode on that. So my day job in higher ed is really helping faculty to think about how they can use it, how their students are using it, and what that looks like. And we're now in this point where we're several years into ChatGPT's kind of, you know, meteoric rise, and then everything else that came out around it from the other research labs. And so we're seeing examples of that in some ways. And we're also seeing it in other ways where students are using it really well. You know, you can use these tools in study modes now, which can help you to be more personalized in your personal tutoring and ability to achieve your academic goals. So it's a real mix, but we're trying to create that culture on campus engaging that. And there's no 100% way to detect it, I think, is the other challenge.
Somebody texted in, I still don't understand what AI is. And as we talk about AI slop, maybe we should take a step back, Adam, and talk about, for people that don't deal with it every day, don't quite understand. They know it's something to do with the computer and something to do with the phone, but they don't quite know what artificial intelligence or AI is.
Yeah, so AI has been around since the 1950s, I believe the term was coined.
Really?
I previously worked at Dartmouth, and the term was coined at Dartmouth with a math conference that had happened there that convened computing experts who were seeing this kind of dawn of possibility. And that's really what it was at that point in the 1950s. It was, you know, a theoretical idea that you could have machines that behave more like humans than machines that follow instructions. And the idea that had to really develop a lot over the next, you know, seven to eight decades before it became, you know, generative AI and ChatGPT. But a lot of those underlying methods with neural networks and deep learning are all tied into everything from the social media algorithms that you were mentioning earlier, Tommy, your recommendations on things like Netflix, whether your car can see a pedestrian in its field of view, mm-hmm. Up through, you know, other systems for predictive analytics related to things like, you know, predicting cancer or heart attack risk or other things for certain audiences, which is leading to all sorts of things with personalized medicine. But what we're seeing now with AI, this new moment with AI, has gone from these predictive systems and kind of systems that would see these patterns in structured and unstructured data to being able to produce something with that, with those same pattern capabilities. So that's really what's at the core of a lot of these generative models.
Somebody texted in, it's interesting how they always pick winners and losers on this. It's them. No, it's them. One side uses it more than the other. Is there any indication that, you know, that conservatives or liberals are using AI to fool people more than the other? Or is that just kind of like the Wild West?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything that would support that. Mm-hmm. What I would say, though, is people are using it in good ways and bad, and that's across the political spectrum. I think it is fitting into our broader conversation about information and bias and disinformation, and it's a tricky moment to be introducing these kinds of tools because there's a lot we need to work through that way as a broader society. And we're seeing a lot of that brought into kind of, you know, more divisive conversations. But you look right now, even during the shutdown, and there's examples of AI videos being created on the part of the Republicans depicting the Democrats in certain ways. And it does happen on, I've seen it. I feel like most of the stuff that's gained traction has been similar to that. But there are examples of people using this badly all over the place.
Yeah, and it's not sanctioned by either party. These are just people that have their own viewpoints that you're saying, right, that are doing these things?
Well, I mean, President Trump is making video. There's examples of videos out there. There was the one that went around with, Representative Jeffries and Schumer. There's a deep fake with Schumer's voice in it. So there are these examples out there that are being used right now. But generally, yeah, people are using this for good ways and bad, and people need to know that. And I think it's on us to really say whether, you know, that's something we expect or don't approve of.
All right. So keep in mind, you got to go very slowly here. But somebody texted in, sure. How do we go from a set of zeros and ones to a deep fake of Christopher Walken dancing with a bear in a circus, for example?
Yeah, and this is where I'll point out, this is not my expertise, I'm a little bit out of my lane, mm-hmm. but my understanding is most of the video and image generation uses what are called diffusion models. And those are they basically can use the zeros and ones to figure out, like, is that thing Christopher Walken? Is it on the edge of Christopher Walken? And it zooms out to the point where it's, when it's doing the training, it can basically see that it is, and then figure out how to put that together after that. And it takes incredible amounts of computation and data. There are these kind of layered neural networks that are involved with it. And as these systems get more powerful, better information, better training, that's where we're seeing it get better at a, you know, that's a pretty good Christopher Walken impression kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. You're not going to, I don't think, replace a stage actor with this, but what's going on as it relates to actors? Because if you look at things like, I'm trying to think of this Disney movie, Polar Express, I think is the name of it, where it's a cartoon, but it really isn't, and it's pretty close to almost looking like real people. And now, as I understand it, with AI, they can generate movies that do look like real people, and also talk about the music aspect of this as well, if you will.
Yeah, so there are all sorts of examples. Computers have been in animation, you know, going back to Pixar and Polar Express and other examples, and you look at The Conductor and it looks like Tom Hanks, right? Mm-hmm. And we've been able to do that with motion capture and other technologies for some time. I think one of the biggest things now that we're seeing is examples of people trying to create their own. This came up in the SAG-AFTRA, the writer's strike, actually, a couple years back. You know, you can use these things to make deep fakes of other individuals. And that isn't that individual. Early on, we had a really, really famous example in Scarlett Johansson sued OpenAI because of her background in the movie Her. They had a voice that sounded strikingly like her mm-hmm. in their voice assistant. And so there are all these examples of people should, to some extent, expect to be able to make their livelihood. And, you know, how do you make sure that you use these things so they don't displace other workers and we're still seeing the quality we would expect? These systems are ultimately averages, right? And even as they get better, it's not as good as an actor. It's never going to be embodied and emotional and those other things. So that's a huge part of acting that we would expect when we go to either the stage or the screen.
So is it to the point where if I'm a producer and it's like, you know what, this part would be perfect if I could just blend Josh Hartnett with Brad Pitt, where AI could develop something like that?
Yeah, so there. I think you were talking about a little bit before the break, there's this example of a production lab out in the UK. Mm-hmm. Particle 6 created this avatar called Tilly Norwood. And Tilly is an avatar that they created. It hasn't been interviewed yet. It hasn't appeared in anything other than social media posts, but they're signing her up with her in quotes. I'm using quotes with my fingers. They're signing that avatar up to work with an agent. And I think it's going to be interesting to see if that even takes off, because I don't think people are asking for that, right? I mean, there is maybe an argument to be made for, are you able to make things that aren't capable in the real world? Are you able to do things at a lower cost? There are different things that could weigh into that decision-making process, but I don't know that people are looking for that necessarily. And I know the actors and the Actors Guild definitely isn't.
Tell me a little bit for people that don't know about Tilly Norwood, because I think that's an amazing story, because if you look at it, it looks like it's real to me, and it does anyway.
Yeah, and the key thing to point out here is it's largely been an Instagram presence with lots of still shots that have been shared on the internet, which are pretty, you know, they're easier to make computationally. But when you start to imagine somebody acting in a movie, something with moving frames, you know, we have good video generation, but is it going to be good enough for a feature length film in that way? I don't know. That we'll have to see about that. But we know the person can act. It's been trained on the average of acting, right? Mm-hmm. How do you pull together all these examples and train on it and distill it down? And you can have instructions via prompt and system prompts and whatnot, but that is ultimately, it's kind of this weird average.
But it has to begin with a human being, correct? or not?
Well, I mean, this is the thing with the training of all these models is they essentially vacuumed up all of our data without permission.
Right.
That could be writing examples. That could be visual images. Getty had a lot of cases early on. Disney, Universal are suing many, Midjourney and others to point out that, hey, like, we didn't authorize this and use our intellectual property. And is that fair use under U.S. copyright law? There are all sorts of questions around that in front of the courts. But it used a lot of human work in order to do what it did. And I think that's my broader point in my AI thought piece is, besides if this is good for us and whether it's helpful or not, one of the big issues with this is it was trained in a really unethical way.
Right.
At almost every level of the process. And yet it's also broadly useful. And how do we weigh that out as a society?
But at some point, it begins with proprietary information, right, for the most part?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and all sorts of examples of piracy and other things.
So to leave this conversation for now, what would you advise people when it comes to vetting what they're watching to tell if it's an AI deep fake or soft fake or whatever the different levels of fakes are?
Yeah, so there are different efforts at watermarking some of these things, but there are lots of systems that aren't using that. So there's no definitive way to know. And as these things get more wild, it's almost a situation that alludes to the fact that it's AI more than the quality of it. And so I would just really tell people, be thoughtful and careful about it. Don't assume that image or video that you're seeing on social media is something real or was authorized by any individual. Like, that very likely could be social media. And, what is the provenance of that kind of information? How do you know it got to that point? Where is it coming from? What are the publishing guidelines of that organization? And how does that look? That's really what you have to do.
I got to sneak one more question which is somebody wants to know if they could, with the approval of the estate, whomever, I don't know, it would be, or the six heirs, if they could generate, say, for example, Humphrey Bogart in a new edition of Fight Club or something along those lines, if everybody would be willing to go along with that. Does the technology exist for that or not yet?
Yeah, there were some. I'm trying to remember whose estate it was. Somebody did authorize that. So we're seeing early examples of that. We're seeing some early non-authorized versions of that. I saw Michael Jackson in a McDonald's on Sora the other day. Mm. So I think that's a huge part of this is it's both there when you don't want it to be, but also I think we'll expect to see some interesting and creative cases where AI can extend somebody's work. And that's a tricky, tricky territory to find ourselves in.
And what about ways for teachers to spot if students are using AI? Are there some tells? Or even parents?
There are all sorts of examples of this on the internet. There are different AI detectors, which largely detect at high false positive rates and really lead to some negative outcomes as far as just the act of accusing somebody without knowing. It's different than plagiarism and academic dishonesty of the past. And I think that's the key thing I would highlight. It's really about building relationships. When I talk to faculty, and that's for parents, that's for teachers, you have to start bringing these things into the process and showing people how to use it well. Mm-hmm. And you have to really emphasize the process over the product. I'm talking a lot to people about building in more milestones for assignments, showing students where they can use it, showing them where they bring themselves to it in a way that they can think that an AI can't right now. There are all sorts of different ways that can be done kind of in a teaching innovation kind of way.
It sounds like you're saying, show me your work, pretty much.
Show me your work, yeah. And there are cases, too, where AI can reason through problems, but, that act of kind of having somebody explain the problem, elaborate on their approach, that's a lot of what we're recommending to our faculty now.
Is there something to be said for AI about leaving emotion out of it?
Yeah, there's all sorts of examples. I was talking to somebody the other day who was talking about using it in brainstorming. Mm-hmm. You can ask it to generate different ideas. And when it's generating those ideas, it's distilling it down from its training and instruction data and background. But the thing that it's ultimately doing is it's distilling all of that down. Yeah, it's challenging that way.
But it still goes back to garbage in, garbage out, because
garbage, yeah.
If there's bias fed into it, that's what's going to come out, right?
Yeah, and the bias piece, you know, and to some extent, one of the things that people note is it's also uninhibited, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe there's something where you would introduce a bias that you would have in it, but it also has encoded in our biases. And there's also examples of where people try to correct for it and overcorrect for some of those biases, and that leads to different outputs, which
to
is
different
its own
biases,
kind of
right?
Out. Yeah, exactly.
And then, not to get in the hall of mirrors here, but you could pass on a bias that you don't even know you have, right?
Yeah.
And then it gets exaggerated.
Yeah, this is a huge part of where I think it's helpful to engage it, but it's so important to have what we call humans in the loop. You know, if you're working with AI systems at work, in school, you know, be ethical in your use around it and really bring yourself to that to understand, like, is it giving me the right information? How can I check it? And it's tricky that way, but there are some tips and strategies that way.
Very interesting, Adam. Thank you. I appreciate your time and your insight. Adam Nemeroff, Assistant Provost for Innovation and Learning, Teaching, and Technology at Quinnipiac University. We also always like to try to learn stuff, and I think we all did just now about AI. We'll talk to Troy Duhon about giving hope when we come back. Tommy Tucker, 943, 17 till 10, traffic now, WWL. It is 9:51, 9 till 10. We're going to talk to my boy Troy Duhon, a Shaw graduate, about the Giving Hope Gala that's coming up on November 15th at the Hilton Riverside. A little miscommunication, but we'll have him on soon to talk about it. It does happen on November 15th, and if you go to givinghopenola.org, you'll see the impact that this organization has had, not just in New Orleans, but throughout the world. And Troy owns dealerships throughout the country. He's a local guy, Shaw graduate. That really is an American success story, but he realized after Katrina that people wouldn't remember how many cars he sold. They'd remember, or perhaps the good Lord would remember, how many people he fed. And with that in mind, he has made this organization something around the nation with Giving Hope chapters all over the place, and also around the world with building some orphanages and things like that. So go to givinghopenola.org if you can to volunteer or donate. The financials are right there on the front page. You can find out everything you need to know about the entire organization. And we'll talk to him soon about the gala that's coming up on November 15th. You can also go to givinghopenola.org to buy your tickets to the gala, and it's the highlight of my November. I look forward to it every year. How'd you like to give the gift of a Jonas Brothers concert just in time for Christmas? That's right. Somebody you love could see the Jonas Brothers in concert in New Orleans. WWL has 5 pair of tickets to see the Jonas Brothers Greetings from Your Hometown Tour. It happens Friday, December 6th at the Smoothie King Center, and winning is pretty easy. All you have to do is go to WWL.com/contest for your chance to win a pair of tickets. You can celebrate a 20-year career with Joe, Nick, and Kevin, the Jonas Brothers, in New Orleans, courtesy of Live Nation and WWL. Newell's next. We'll find out what he's got for us. I can tell you ahead of time, it's going to be a big interview with Helena Moreno coming up. That and more when we return on WWL.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
Make every day a Disney Plus and Hulu day and get everything you love in one plan. Start your day with Monday Mayhem and watch episodes of Bob's Burgers. How about a Touchdown Tuesday with the hilarious new comedy Chad Powers? Or a Whodunit Wednesday with high potential and everyone's favorite amateur sleuths in the hit series Only Murders in the Building? Maybe you're in the mood for a thrilling Thursday. Grab some popcorn and stream huge blockbusters like Marvel Studios' Thunderbolts on Disney Plus, or get caught up with the most enthralling news on what you need to know. Gather the fam for a Flashback Friday and binge all episodes of Modern Family or Grey's Anatomy. So, discover something every day on Disney Plus and Hulu. It's the movies and shows you love, every day. 18 and up only, offer valid for eligible subscribers only, terms apply.